Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Treacherous Mountain Investigation by Stephanie M. Gammon. A journalist's job could get her killed. Years ago, Elizabeth Hart took down a human trafficking ring in the Rocky Mountains with a single blog post, and now someone wants revenge. But her ex-fiancé, Officer Regan Price, won't let anyone hurt her or his newly discovered son. With the threats only escalating, can Liz trust the man who broke her heart and live to give their family a second chance?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I'm talking with Stephanie Gammon. She fell in love with romantic suspense as a Sherlock-obsessed girl with bookshelves full of Grace Livingston Hill novels. Her debut novel, Treacherous Mountain Investigation, is on sale now, and she has her own source for getting those police details right in her house. So we're going to talk a little bit about writing and romantic suspense. So welcome to my show, Stephanie.
Thank you, Sarah. It's wonderful to be here.
So your bio says that your husband is a police lieutenant, and I must say I'm jealous because you can just ask him all the questions that we have to hunt down and find, you know, a police officer willing to talk to us about. Is that really cool or what?
It is really cool. It makes it a lot less awkward for me because, as you said, I don't have to hunt somebody down to get these questions. However, sometimes it's even hard to pull the answers out of him because it's just so normal to his everyday life that he doesn't really stop and think about the details that I'm looking for. So that can make it a challenge when I'm asking questions, maybe about like what type of bag they would use to put evidence in, right? He's just thinking, oh, it's just a bag. You just put the evidence in there, right? But I'm looking for more details. So that does make it a little challenging. So what we've actually come to is I will write a scene and then he'll read it and tell me, okay, this is right or this wasn't quite right, you know, you need to change this. So to get to that place, I actually do a lot of internet research as well. So I'll go into the internet, I'll, you know, Google, you know, we're talking about the plastic bags or evidence. And in one scene, I realized, oh, if this is like degradable evidence, then it needs to be in a paper bag. So then I will write the scene out like that, and then he'll read through it and say, yeah, but it seals this way. You don't zip it, you pat it or whatever like that. And then he'll get the details right for me.
Oh, that's really nice. So, does he read fiction in general when he's not?
He's actually not a reader, and he just made the joke the other day that he's read two books in his life, and they were both mine. He read a final draft of one that has not been published yet. That was the first one he read, and then he just finished this one after it was printed, and we were actually in the Rocky Mountains, and it's set in the Rocky Mountains, and he read it while we were out there for a weekend. Now he's read two books. He really has read more, but he's not much of a reader, but he enjoys reading my writing, so that's very nice, very romantic.
Yeah, that is romantic. You know, my husband, who I love dearly, I have to say, of course, but he doesn't read much fiction. And he's a editor-writer like me. He's more of a technical editor-writer. And so I tell him to stay far away from my manuscripts because if you don't read a lot of fiction, and the fiction he tends to read is not romantic suspense. And so he tends to want to correct things that are correct especially in fiction and in the romantic suspense genre. And so it just was a series of frustrations. So I was like, no, you can read them when they're all published if you want. He gives me the gift of time to write. He helps me, you know, we have four children, a foster daughter, you know, everyone's home. Mm-hmm. So he's very helpful with that. So that's how he supports me. But no, I can't let him read it because we'll both be frustrated. So, now, why romantic suspense? Why did you want to write in that genre?
Right. It is actually a funny story to me, but I can see how it all ties together now that I'm actually in it. But when I was looking for an agent, I had targeted the agent that I wanted, and so I gave her a proposal of a book I'd already written, and now it's funny to say it was Amish fiction, right? And I had written it in response to like a call out that Love Inspired had done a couple years ago. And so she took, you know, the proposal and looked at it, and then she sent me back an email and said, well, what about romantic suspense? Can you write romantic suspense? Do you have any ideas? And I didn't at that point in time have any ideas, but I was like, I can do this. So I replied to her. I said, sure, I have ideas. I'll send you one next week, right? And so that's actually how I started the first scene, the first chapter, and the, you know, just the overarching plot line of the book that's still unpublished, but that helped me get my agent. So that's how I started there. But then after, you know, I started writing it, I realized even in that first Amish manuscript that I had written, it had so many suspense elements, and that I really enjoyed mostly writing in the suspense along with the romance. And, you know, that got me thinking, in my bio it says Sherlock obsessed. I'm still Sherlock obsessed. I love the show Sherlock. My complete collected Sherlock stories is falling apart at the binding. But I also love Grace Livingston Hill, and that was a big aspect in her writing, was that it was romance, but she always had the element of suspense.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see now where I would have ended up there, even if my agent had not asked me if I was interested in writing it.
Yeah, I was laughing at reading your Grace Livingston Hill reference because my mom had all those books on her shelf, and I read all of them as well. I don't run into many people.
Don't know what I'm talking about.
I know, right? That's why I was like,
and
I said,
she's
yep.
Amazing.
Yeah, I can picture the spines lining up on their, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. And boy, talk about a prolific writer. I mean,
yes.
She wrote like tons of books. So anyways, it's just really funny that I was like, yeah, I didn't think I'd ever meet anyone who actually under the age of 60 who hadn't read had read her.
Right, because she wrote so long ago. But I had found them at my piano teacher's house, actually, while I was waiting for the student before me, and this was when I was seventh grade, while I was waiting for the student before me to finish their lesson, I would sit in, like, the waiting room, and she had a bookcase, and it was full of Grace Livingston Hill, all that was on it, you know, hundreds of books, and so I would borrow one from her every week, and that's how I got started, but yeah, she was older. So
yeah, I know, it just was kind of funny that, yeah, no, I loved her, and she did have the area of mystery in her book.
Yes, definitely.
Until you mentioned it, I just remembered them as being like sweet romances, which they were. But I'd forgotten about that element. So, and we do have one other thing in common. My agent also told me, why don't you try romantic suspense?
Oh,
so, well, actually, before she was my agent, I had pitched something to her. She's like, why don't you try romantic suspense? And I was like,
right.
Okay. So that's kind of funny.
Apparently it's worked for us both.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and I love writing that, you know, because you do get to marry those, you know, the romance and the suspense part of it. So, but what are some of the, what's the go-to? I mean, we're recording this, just for my listeners, this will air sometime in the fall, but we're recording this in September, where people are still staying home a lot, and you know, kids are home from school in lots of parts of the country. How do you find time to write? I mean, it says you have 4 kids, 2 dogs, 2 parakeets, a husband, your own business.
Yes.
How do you do it?
It's very challenging to find time to write. And over the past couple years, the way I'm finding that time changes and looks different at different periods of time. When I was writing the book that just came out, I actually, all my kids were home. I was homeschooling one of them, and then it was in the summertime, and just trying to find time to write was very difficult. And I ended up building myself a cabin in the woods by hand. So I like got on Craigslist and found free wood pallets, and I think I ended up only buying a couple 2x4s from Home Depot, and my dad had some old like metal roofing, and I just drug it all back to the woods and built myself a cabin. And then I'd be like, okay, I'm leaving the house, I'm walking back to the cabin, everybody leave me alone. And that did work. But this year, all of my kids are in school. The youngest one started kindergarten last year, so he's first grade now. And so this morning I was just able to drive down to the river. We live on the Ohio River, and sit next to the river and kind of write and think. But finding time is difficult. You know, they come home and all want your attention. You know how it is with four kids.
Yep.
One wants your attention. They walk away. The next one is just this rotating thing. And then it can be hard to think after that, right?
Yeah.
But my husband is now on like night shift, so that is helpful because he'll leave for work, and then after the kids go to bed, it's just like this peace settles over the house, and I can just sit and quiet and find time to write then.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then your kids grow up and they're teenagers, so the nighttime is loud.
Well, I have one teenager, and she actually has her area in the basement, and so I'm on the second floor.
Okay.
And the loudest it gets then after I send her to bed is she'll send me TikTok videos via text message.
Oh, funny.
But other than that, it's pretty quiet.
Yeah, no, I've had to because our schools are virtual, and then homeschooling our middle schoolers because the virtual was not going to work for them. So we're finally kind of settling into the routine. But I've been having to get up early to write before everyone's awake or needs me, like you said. And that's been better, you know. I went to bed early anyway, so now I was going to bed a little bit earlier. And my teenage daughters always tease me about that. But I'm like, hey, you know, I am a fuddy-duddy. Okay, we've all established that. Mom's going to bed.
Right.
So, you know, and it's been, you know, because, you know, I value my writing time and it wasn't getting done, you know,
right.
Because you have to have the right mindset to do this creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can write other articles, you know, with half a brain, you know, I don't need that creativity like I do for fiction writing. And you know, it's important, you know, build a cabin, find out what works. And when we want to do something, we'll find a way to do it.
And that's a great point you're making about you do have to have that mindset for the fiction writing. I see that, and I have a business writing resumes and cover letters and LinkedIn profiles. And I can do that half asleep, distracted by four kids, right? It's as easy as, I don't know, sweeping the floor or something. But with fiction writing, it's so much more difficult because you have to get into that world. And you can't get into that world when you're still very consumed by the world you're living in presently. So
right.
That is a challenge.
Yeah. Well, we are almost out of time, Stephanie. Is there anything else you would like to share with our readers about your writing or work?
No, I don't have anything else to share except check it out. I would love to share Liz and Riggin's story with everybody. And I really appreciate you having me on your podcast today.
Well, stay tuned for an excerpt from Treacherous Mountain Investigation after this interview. And it's my pleasure to talking with you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
On this episode, you've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I've been chatting with Stephanie Gammon. She's a writer with her debut novel, Treacherous Mountain Investigation, is out today. You can find out how to connect with her with the notes for this bio, and I hope you'll join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Treacherous Mountain Investigation by Stephanie M. Gammon. Alone on the summit of Manitou Springs Incline, Elizabeth Hart focused her camera phone down the slope on the town that had started her career. She clicked one perfect shot. When this project was complete, she'd sever the weight that hung from her like a bag of rocks for 5 long years. Shutters quaked her. Manitou Springs, Colorado was trouble. She had planned to never step foot in it again. Gravel crunched under her feet as she jumped onto the closest boulder and pulled out a worn piece of paper. With a shake of her head, her topknot fell to blanket her chilled shoulders. The sweat she'd worked up on the mile hike was plummeting her core temp, and this cotton tank was no match for the cool July morning. She'd forgotten this climb had always fallen closer to intense than fun on the adventure spectrum, even when she hadn't been so alone. Fisting the faded letter in her hand, she kneaded her knuckles deep into her pectoral. Visiting Manitou Springs on the tail end of her Colorado project should have been easy. Why couldn't she let go? "I'm not alone anymore," she whispered. "God will never leave me or forsake me." If only her recent trust in God's love would stop the shivers from winding down her spine. Just being in this town brought life and color back to moments best unremembered. That was exactly why she'd almost given a solid pass when American Travel Magazine had sought her out to create content for a Rocky Mountain regional showcase. She shoved the wadded paper back into her pocket. If she aced this project, she'd have her foot firmly in the door for the magazine's full-time travel editor position and the chance for a steady paycheck. Lucas deserved that security. She rolled back her shoulders at the thought of her son. It was simple enough. For Lucas, she'd relive every Manitou memory. Shielding her eyes, she surveyed the valley. This view from Pike's Peak was worth every muscle-quivering, solitary tread. She'd post a social media shout-out to her hotel's concierge for suggesting the early hike, because these views would go a long way toward solidifying her chances with American Travel. Manitou Springs, Colorado Springs, and the Garden of the Gods glimmered like gold. She looked up at the sky. "And thank you, too." She might still be new to her relationship with God, but she knew where to give her appreciation. A group of hikers ascended from the false summit a few hundred steps below. The trail was beginning to buzz with activity, and she closed her eyes to savor her last drop of solitude. Her phone vibrated. She opened her eyes. A picture of her 4-year-old son lit the home screen. She pushed away the memories, shrugged back into her mommy armor, and swiped the answer button.
"Mommy!"
Liz grinned at the precious pixelated face and held her phone at arm's length so Lucas could see the mountain behind her.
"Good morning, handsome. Guess what I just did?"
She caught her forced smile in the corner thumbnail. She was an expert at the having it all together act. That's all it was, an act. Someday, Lucas would see right through it. But for now, he just rubbed chubby, dimpled fists over his eyes and grinned.
"Adventuring?"
his small voice asked.
"You bet."
She stood and turned to show him the 2,000-foot descent into the valley. She'd teach Lucas to seize every day, even if it scared her to death.
"I climbed a mountain."
"Wow!"
His tiny head bobbed in excitement. Nostalgia and disillusionment wrapped twin vices around her middle. He looked just like his father. The note burned like an iron in her pocket. When she was finished with this hike, she'd leave it in a trash bin and finally put Riggin Price behind her. Forgetting that man was the best thing she could do for her son. The screen pixelated again, sliding Lucas's lazy smile and dark hair with a white patch on his cowlick into a crazy kaleidoscope of color. Pieces of her heart seemed to slide around in the same disjointed disarray. She kissed the screen to the sound of garbled giggles and shoved all thoughts but those of her son away.
"Mommy loves you, kiddo. I've got to get back to work. Tell Aunt Kat I'll be home tonight." Kat would be listening in the background. Liz pitched her voice higher. Tell her I'll pack everything up in time. The picture cleared as Lucas fish-kissed the screen. Kat passed into view behind him, and disapproval flitted across her sister's face. What had she done to deserve that look now? Shouts below her dragged her attention from asking. Like human stares, hikers stood on separate railroad ties and gestured her way. She kissed the screen and ended the call before waving back at her fellow hikers. No doubt Kat would regale her with a complete list of her failings soon enough. The hikers' shouts didn't stop. They rose up the slope with avalanche force. A man jabbed the air in front of him with his trekking pole. The others pointed. Their words flew away on mountain wind. She tilted her head, trying to pluck their muffled message from the air. Then scrapes sounded behind her, and rocks cascaded around her feet. Before she could turn, calloused palms scraped down her biceps. Hot fingers dug into her bare skin. Terror leached down her spine. She tried to heave her body forward, but all she felt was the scrape of her thighs against jagged stone as she was wrenched back and over a boulder. She threw her head back as an arm wrapped around her skull. Her heart jolted to a stop. Another arm squeezed her waist with python strength, and moist breath flooded her ear canal as she was pressed back into a hard embrace. She flailed her arms. Fear pulverized her gut. Help! She squeezed her phone, fumbling with the emergency sequence on her power button. But pain slashed through her wrist, and her grip opened. Echoing thuds rose to her ears. Her phone and canteen hitting the ground? The stranglehold loosened as fingers moved down and clamped a chokehold around her neck. God, help! An intense, crushing force snaked through every muscle, rendering them useless. She tried to fight, to cry out, but her head was too heavy. Her tongue wouldn't move. Then, only darkness.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.